This episode of the YVR Screen Scene Podcast is brought to you by UBCP-ACTRA, aka the Union of British Columbia Performers. UBCP is an autonomous branch of the Alliance of Canadian Cinema, Television, and Radio Artists, the national organization of professional performers working in the English language recorded media in Canada. For more information about UBCP-ACTRA, visit ubcpactra.ca.
This episode was sponsored in part by listeners like you. Join our Patreon community and receive early access to episodes, bonus content, stickers, buttons, and more. Visit www.patreon.com/YVRScreenScenePodcast.
Welcome to the YVR Screen Scene Podcast, where we pull back the curtain and expose the beating heart of the Vancouver film and television industry, namely the actors and filmmakers and other talented artists who do the work. Capital T, capital W. I'm Sabrina Rani Firminger. Today, I am delighted to welcome a trio of powerhouse women to the YVR Screen Scene Podcast Formica table. Laura Adkin, Bronwyn Smith, Carmen Moore. I don't use the word powerhouse lightly. And frankly, that word applies to every single actor and crew member involved in reuniting. The feature film directorial debut from Laura Adkin. Every one of the performers in reuniting is a powerhouse. Besides powerhouse Carmen and powerhouse Bronwyn, we've got friends of the podcast, Michelle Harrison, Roger Cross, and David Lewis, and a not yet friend of the podcast, but friend of friends of the podcast, Jessie L. Martin, who is a very talented multi-hyphenate, but who will always be Tom Collins in Rent to Me, and that is the reason why I can never, ever meet him, ever! Because I went to a performing arts high school in the 90s. That's all I'm going to say. These are all seasoned performers at the tops of their game. The top of their games. Anyway, they basically explode off of the screen in reuniting. And honestly, Laura is setting the bar very, very high for every single feature film that follows this one. Reuniting is the story of a group of college friends who graduated from university together in the late 90s and reunite for the first time in nearly a decade at a beautiful waterfront property on Bowen Island. They all come bearing scars from the traumas of the intervening years, as well as many secrets. And that is all I am at liberty to say. Reuniting is devastating drama with a capital D, but also with moments of humor and love, so much love. I'm not sure if you want to put this on the promotional posters, Laura, but I cried so much watching Reuniting that I threw up. And that's something because I know all of you personally, except for Jessie, as we've already established, and I've seen all of you in various projects, and yet I still cried when that thing happened to that one character. And FYI, we are a spoiler-free zone. I felt the devastation in my soul. And yet, it's the kind of catharsis that I'm grateful to have had because it was life-affirming and also very beautiful. So today, we're not going to talk about vomiting. We're going to talk about reuniting, catharsis, adventures in island filmmaking, and being a powerhouse. Let's get to it. Laura Adkin, Carmen Moore, Rhonda Smith. Welcome to the YVR Screen Scene Podcast.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to start with you, Adkin.
Yes.
Why this particular story for your feature film directorial debut? Was it to make me throw up?
Yes, that is the exact thing that happened. No. So, like 10 years ago, I was at TIFF and I saw a retrospective anniversary screening of The Big Chill. And the entire cast was there. And I remember watching it and being like, why don't we make movies like this anymore? Like, why don't we make these ensemble dramas? I'm like, I should come up with an idea. And I sort of had an idea, but I wasn't really in a place in my life at that time to write it. I didn't have the life experience and et cetera, et cetera. And then a few years later, I knew I wanted to make my my first film. And so I talked to a friend of mine who his name is Todd Berger, and he is an incredible writer. And he's like, Laura, work backwards. What do you have access to? And so I thought about the amazing talent pool in Vancouver and the people that I knew. My mom lives on Bowen Island. I'm like, oh, I'd love to shoot there. And then this story that was in the back of my head for a very long time sort of came to the forefront. And that was how it sort of started.
Okay. Actually, before we get into talking more about the film, I want to hear from each one of you. What were you like at 22 years old? Because like I've been thinking a lot about that. I'm 44 now. I was 22 when I moved to Vancouver. And it's like, that is such a precious, very specific point of view and attitude, and your brain is still building, and yet the friendships from that time, you know, they can be so important. Carmen's laughing.
Carmen is laughing.
Here, let's get more into the mic there, Carmen.
I was drunk. A lot.
I think a lot of 22-year-olds,
Yeah, but I was drunk in a way that probably wasn't great, which is why I've now been sober for 23 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. But I remember, you know, I loved bringing life into a room. I loved inspiring people to just be in a joyful place. You know, I was the girl that was, I'd be stuck in traffic and I'd pull a bottle of bubbles out of my glove compartment and just blow bubbles out the window to just give people something to look at while they're stuck in traffic, you know? Like, wow. I like doing things like that. I don't do that anymore. Why don't I do that?
You know what's so funny, though? You say that you don't do that, but I remember at the Leo's a few years ago, and you showed up on the red carpet, and you had like a Slurpee or a Big Gulp or something.
I had a big pop from McDonald's.
It was comically large.
Yes. And you had I made sure that it was big so that I could walk onto the red carpet in a ball gown. Yes. With my big, my big root beer.
That's basically the red carpet equivalent to blowing bubbles, right? Like, because...
I guess it is. Okay.
You still do that.
I mean, when was the last time I was at the Leo's, though? Probably many years ago.
Well, hope you submitted for this film. That's all I'm going to say, team reuniting.
Thinking about my early 20s, I remember at the time saying that me and my friends were assholes. Like, I was aware, that early 20s, you rule the world, you own everything, it's all about you. And I remember sort of taking a step back and realizing, wow, this attitude is really not cool. I don't like this. But also giving myself a break because I was in my early 20s and stupid and dumb. I'm glad I'm not in my 20s. Like, I'm really, like, I remember hitting my 30s and going, yes, bye.
I felt that way when I turned 40, frankly.
Oh, okay.
Felt a way that I was not expecting to feel, just liberated. But it's so funny because I think when you're in your 20s, or at least when I was in my 20s, I was scared of being older than 20s, you know, because you're like, but now I'm like, oh, actually, 20s is the hardest decade in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It's really, really hard, and it's emotional and scary and insecure, and there was fun. I remember seeing bands constantly, The Town Pump, Richards on Richards, Starfish Room, all those good times.
Wow. And,
but yeah, I'm so glad to not be in my early 20s.
I will say, though, what informs this question is the fact that in the end credits, we see photos of each of you, you know, from that period of time. What about you, Adkin?
So I moved to LA in my early 20s and went to theater school and partied a lot. And just honestly, I wanted to be Amanda Tapping. That's what I wanted. And so
we all want to be Amanda Tapping.
So
even
everything
now.
I did was like to try to be like badass, but it didn't really. Oh, if I could show you all my headshots from back in that time with my jackets and like this ridiculous. But yeah, no, I was. I had a. I, I had this boyfriend that was in a band and we used to go to the Sunset Strip all the time. And yeah, I just like had a pool in my backyard. I was like living my best life, not realizing how expensive everything is because my mom was still giving me money. Right. So I didn't quite understand. But it was also my first time living on my own. And yeah, I just had like, I had so many dreams. I think that's like, for me, that was one of the reasons for writing this movie, is because remembering back when I was like 18, 19, 20 and where I thought my life would be at that time and then where it is now and the differences. And that is interesting to me because we have all these dreams and all these things and all these ideas and then where it actually goes. Like, you know, I don't want all of the dreams that I had. One of them being marry Nick Carter. That was my ultimate goal as a teenager.
Wow. I mean, I did see that photo of David Lewis. It's because you hadn't seen a photo of him in his early 20s, right?
Yeah. David had a mullet in his 20s.
Amazing. So when the two of you first saw, like either, I don't know, did you see a completed script or a treatment or something? Like, what was your first reaction, you know, to the material and to these characters? Oh, you're just, the look they gave each other is quite incredible.
Luckily, I work with Laura. We both teach at Vancouver Acting School. And she came up to me one day and said that, I think I'm writing a part for you in this film. And I'm like, good, do it. Keep going. I like what I'm hearing. I don't care what the part is. Keep writing. It's for me? Okay. And so she would give me descriptions of the idea of the character. And so I was aware of it. And I would check in and say, please keep writing. Keep going. And I was on board. And I was thrilled that anyone would have the idea to write something for me. So I, yeah. And then it was great to finally read it. And that first table read was on Zoom was wonderful to see all these people that she had imagined and put so vividly on the page.
Laura called me on a Wednesday and said, could you read a script? By the way, we go to camera on Saturday.
Laura?
Someone else had been cast in the role and had a scheduling conflict, and Laura called basically in a panic and was like, would you be interested? Are you available? And I said, I'll read the script. So I read about maybe 10 pages and my character hadn't even fully been introduced yet. And I called her back and I said, I'm in. I think the next day, Liz, our costumer, came over to my house with a bunch of stuff from her closet and I grabbed a bunch of stuff from my closet and did a, you know, just a whirlwind kind of wardrobe fitting. And then I was on a ferry to Bowen Island in like a couple of days.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing to know that it was somebody else. And I'm not going to ask you now, maybe later, you know, who that other person was, mm-hmm. because it just, it's so, I can't even at this point imagine.
I can't either.
Anybody else in that role.
I felt, you know, I just kind of fell into it and I was like, yeah, this is not a character that I would normally be asked to play.
Yeah.
It's not a character like anything I've ever done before. And that's, I think that's part of the reason too, that I was so eager to jump in.
Yeah.
That I've never gotten to do any sort of lighthearted comedy before. Not that this movie is lighthearted comedy by any means, but it's...
Hence my throwing up.
Yeah.
Which I think I will be bringing up again and again.
But I was able to play with a little bit of comedy in this movie.
And you're very funny.
Well, please don't build it up though, because it's been built up for some people and then they watch the movie and they're like, okay, you were good.
I'm sorry, but that the way that your character is introduced... I was shocked. I laughed so hard. Oh, and like by that point, I was like, I have no idea what this movie is yet. I have no idea what is going to happen.
It's
right?
fun that way. Though,
like, there's
the way
fun
it's revealed,
stuff. And then
though,
there's
right?
like darkness. And I'm like, oh my God, Laura, I have things to say. So drama with hits of comedy. Why do you think, like, as artists and as audiences, we are drawn to tragedy? Like, why can you, like, it's this feels like a therapy thing for me or book club. Why do I not mind crying so much that I threw up?
I think that's why movies are amazing, because I think a lot of the time we allow ourselves to feel when we watch something through other people in a way that we don't allow ourselves to feel in our own real lives. Mm. That's why I think movies are so important and amazing, because a lot of people just like live their lives and never get to feel anything. They don't allow themselves. But when there's that barrier of like it's happening over there, then you can allow yourself to go there.
Mm. And art really is therapy to me. I mean, I've said it before that, you know, being an actor saved my life. You know, I'm 14 years old. I hated myself. I didn't want to be here. And drama was introduced in high school. And I got to be on a stage and be other characters and feel things that I was too terrified to feel as me.
Yeah.
And work through those things on stage. So when we go to a theater and we can feel what those characters are feeling, we are working through our own stuff. Yeah. Okay. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I credit my entire life, how I feel about myself today, because I'm an actor.
Mm, that's really that is very beautiful. All of these characters, even those who don't like each other very much, have history, which like needs chemistry, or leads to chemistry even. This is not a very well thought out question. And I'm not going to fix it in post, because some of these I wrote. I just want to clarify about the throwing up. It wasn't that I was like disgusted and I threw up. I was sobbing, gulping air so much like that. And that's why I threw up. So my questions really represent that. What I'm trying to say is, Laura, what did you do as a director to foster chemistry among your actors? You know, that sense of history, you know, that they all share. I mean, I believed it that they had all gone to college
together. I would love to take credit for all of that, but no, the actors, that's their job. That's what they do. And casting, that's what I did, is I cast people who I thought would be awesome and then put them in a room together. that's what I did. I know some of the actors met ahead of time, but I didn't facilitate any of that. I just let them all do what they needed to do. And I hope I respected everyone's process. That's what I tried my best to do. As a director, I think one of the things you need to do really, really quickly at the beginning is figure out what everyone needs. And then I realized, oh my God, I made a movie with six leads. I need to very quickly figure out what six individual human beings need to like feel comfortable and be able to be vulnerable. And they're all very different. Oh my God. So maybe don't do six leads for your very first film while you're trying to figure all of this out.
or do it.
I don't know. But I think casting. That's it. Just like finding people that I personally would want to hang out with.
Yeah.
And then hope they all hang out together. Ideally, like I wanted to have a rehearsal day, which would have just been everyone hanging out, but then, you know, scheduling and COVID and all sorts of stuff. So we didn't end up having that, but I think it all kind of worked out.
Oh yeah, it did.
Oh, I also made them like live together though.
Yeah, there
like,
was that.
I made Carmen and Bronwyn live together on Bowen, and then David and Roger live together on Bowen.
Had you lived together before, no, Spencer?
We didn't know each other.
No. You didn't know each other at all?
No.
Whoa.
I know, but I mean, how can you not love her?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, that's seriously amazing. So that is something that you did. That was smart, Laura.
I just remember that.
You're so smart. You just forgot about it. Amazing. You know, so this kind of leads to this question then, because this is, let's talk about Laura as if she's not here. This is the Laura Atkin feature film directorial debut. What can you tell me about the magic of working on a Laura Atkin film?
The room to explore and play. We had really lovely long takes, so a lot of the time it felt like doing theater on camera. So we weren't made to be always mindful of where the camera is, and that is such a gift. I mean, that's part of our job too, but that's not what our primary focus was. Our primary focus was being connected with each other and focused on what was the story of that scene and what we needed to do instead of all of those other technical things, and just being given that space and that room and that trust. Like, you know, when a director trusts you to know that you know what you're doing, that that goes a long way to having the confidence and the freedom to explore in that, which is wonderful. And I think that shows great wisdom for somebody that's their first feature and knew that that was the right approach.
You know, don't tell Laura this, but that is exactly the what people say about Amanda.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She is so like Amanda.
Carmen, you've been directed by Amanda. You know what she's like with actors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Very similar. Very, very similar, I've got to say. No, honestly, though, like, it's just, you know, Laura never showed if she got frustrated or if she was feeling insecure or if she had, like, if there were was doubt in her brain at all. I'm sure there was.
There was.
But you know what? She maintained this like level-headed energy throughout the whole shoot, even though it was like very low budget and we had very limited amount of time and locations to do all of these things. And it helped that she wrote the script. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just, again, you know, everything that Bronwyn said, that, you know, that the freedom to just to create and to play and to just, you know, it was just a really, really beautiful energy through the whole thing. And I'm thank you for that.
I almost don't want to say anything to interrupt the moment, but it is my podcast. We should keep going.
I love you.
How did you as actors not succumb to despair while playing out this kind of emotional story?
Who said we didn't?
I'm always interested in that because I'm not, I mean, I'm not an actor myself, you know, when you're playing out, I mean, there's joy and then there's devastation and secrets. Like, what do you do to look after yourself during that? Mm-hmm. And then to get up and, you know, the next day and to get right back into it. I love that it's, I'm sorry, you just decided that it's Bronwyn first, Carmen. You keep noticing. Yeah.
I feel oddly lucky that I've been able to tackle really challenging characters before that have had incredible things to have to go through. Mm. And I doing all of the boring stuff, like getting enough sleep, taking care of myself, going for a walk, like stepping out of the character. But also there's a bit of it too where I feel like it's honoring my story, a friend's story, someone I don't even know's story, and that when I think of it as a greater purpose, it's helpful and makes it not feel like a burden I'm carrying myself, and that it's for making people not feel so alone in the world because they can see that in themselves and their story. Mm-hmm. So then that makes it lessens the burden. It makes it a little bit easier, and that I can step out of it at the end and say, this is not happening to me right now. And I'm grateful. And I'm grateful how this is different, but I relate to it because I've experienced those things too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Absolutely. It really does. And I think that was one of the reasons that I was sobbing so much was because there's universal elements even in the tragedy, especially in the tragedy, I think. Mm-hmm. But we don't talk about it. We don't talk about death. We don't talk about, you know, confronting... Oh man, is that a spoiler to say death? Well, there's death. Yeah, it's the biggest tragedy. Yeah.
It's also the kind of the whole point is looking at that second act of your life, right? Yeah. Like that's the thing where it's like most of these characters are kind of closer to death than we are to when we're born. That's just kind of, you know,
and more of an awareness.
Yeah,
of it,
and confronting that. And I like to write about things that scare me and terrify me and that I need to process. So, yes. Yeah.
So basically you put your therapy on screen and you torture
and
the rest.
I make everyone else watch it. Yes.
What about for you, Carmen? What did you do to look after yourself?
Well, in my career, my 30 plus year career, I've actually played a lot of characters who are dealing with, you know, I've had a lot of roles that have been Indigenous and
as fans of Blackstone know, yes.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, there have been a lot of shows that I've done with very deep, emotional, painful, devastating storylines to tackle. And you know what? When you're in it, you're just doing it. And, you know, there's some self-care, you know, I got to make sure that I get to bed at a great hour, you know, if at all possible, if I'm not working a 20-hour day. But also, you know, you're running on adrenaline and you're just doing your job. And then at the end of it, you know, when we say wrap, I go and sleep for about 2 weeks. That kind of thing. And then, you know, just doing really nice things for yourself and honoring the stuff that comes up after and, you know, saying thank you to the character and saying, you know what, it's time for you to go now. I need to take my life back.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Laura, I don't have anything to compare this to, but I would argue that this film is explicitly and delightfully Bowen Island, you know, like there are things that are like Vancouver shows. Yeah. And like this is like a Bowen Island film. Why did you set your film on Bowen Island instead of going for like a generic, like non-specific North American island setting? That's number one. And then number two, what kind of special challenges were associated with filming on an island?
Right. So Bowen is beautiful. I knew we were going to shoot there for practical reasons, right? I wanted to shoot on an island, and Bowen Island is a 15-minute ferry from Vancouver. Like, it's just, it's close. Also, my mom lives there, so I could stay with her. Michelle lived there. Mm-hmm. So Michelle was sort of the first person that I thought about for the movie. And I was like, oh, if I film it on Bowen, she's going to say yes because it's so close. And at one point I was like, should I ask her if I can film it in her house? we did not. I wanted the community to be involved and I wanted the community to be excited about it. And so it's like, why not set it on Bowen? Look, I made them go to an American university so that it, you know, there was like American elements in it as well. It's like you're on Bowen, so might as well be Bowen. And then everyone in the community gets excited about it.
Yeah. Was there anything that was hard about
it? I mean, it was a pandemic. So that was very difficult. You know, all the COVID protocols and the masking and all the travel bans and all of that. But in a way, it really helped us. So there was no one on Bowen Island except people that lived there. So there was lots of bed and breakfasts and Airbnbs that were available. So we were able to put money into the community that way. We did all of our catering on island. So we were able to put money into the community by getting food from them. And, you know, and everyone that stayed there went out for dinners and bought groceries and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I mean, obviously the ferry is annoying. We didn't put everybody up all the time on the island. We had one like late night shoot where we put everybody up, but otherwise a lot of the crew just drove to West Van and then we shuttled them from there. So, you know, if you miss a ferry, we had a couple actors, no one in this room. We had a couple actors miss ferries. And so that...
It was David, wasn't it?
It was... No, he was not. He was on the island. It was some of our day player actors. And they missed ferries and that, you know, that kind of threw things a little bit. But it was fine. We figured it out. That was... I'm like looking over at my producer.
I know.
Like, she had lots of challenges. Here's why Krista Rand is such a great producer is because a lot of the challenges she kept from me until after, so that I could focus on the actors and I could focus on the shoot. And then she downloaded it all afterwards. And I was like, oh my God, that happened? And she was like, yeah, took care of it, took care of it, took care of it. So Krista's a really good producer.
Superstar.
Yes.
I want you each to tell me about a memorable day on set, maybe your favorite, maybe not. But when you think about, you know, the experience of making Reuniting, you know, what comes to mind?
Jumping off a dock into the ocean.
Was that cold?
Are you kidding me? It's Canada. It's an island. What month were we there?
It was May.
Oh my gosh.
It was May.
Oh yeah.
In my mind, it was August.
No, it was May.
Oh God.
It was May. So yeah. I jumped into the water before because I was like, if I'm going to ask these actors to jump into the water, I'm going to go jump in. So Michelle Harrison, who jumps into the water all the time, she does it all the time in the winter. I don't know what is happening over there.
Cold plunger.
She's a cold plunger. So her and I went and jumped off the same dock that I was going to make everyone jump off. And I can attest to the fact that it was friggin' cold. It was very, very cold. And like that day was stressful because we don't have the money to reset anyone's hair.
What about for you, Bronwyn?
Oh, so many. And it's so bad because I probably always say the same thing. But the seals?
Bronwyn is obsessed with the seals. We just like stopped filming so she could go look at the seals.
I know. And I grew up here. I've been on the water a bunch. Like, I mean, it's not new, but it's always exciting when
they're cute.
Puppies.
They're our cats, really. It's very aerodynamic.
Popping out of the water. And it's amazing.
But Bronwyn and seals is a whole other level of like, yes, this has happened. And they're so sweet. And they're like happy. But Bronwyn like cries over the seals.
Oh, that's great.
It's just, it's pretty exciting. Yeah. So,
there's tears at go to your eyes.
It was really wonderful. I loved it a lot.
That's how Bronwyn got through the shoot, okay? Right, for those seals.
Yeah, the seals.
You should pay the seals. I'm sure you have lots of memorable days, Adkin.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so many. And they all kind of like blend into one. I like the days that are super, super stressful and it feels like it's never going to work and then it works. That's really cool to me when we're expecting to do something and then. Excuse me. And then, and then it just is like, doesn't work. And then it works. And figuring out the shot of the jumping off the dock, because we had to get the sun just right. We had, everything had to be just right. And everyone was freaking out around me, except me and Sterling.
I was going to say, like, you had Sterling
Bancroft. Yeah, Sterling and I knew exactly when we wanted to. And everyone's like, the sun's going down, Laura, the sun's going down, the sun's going down. Do you know the sun? I'm like, I can see the sun. I'm very aware where it is. Thank you. And then as soon as it was right, we went. And it just like, that shot is awesome. The other thing that happened that was really cool is we were doing B-roll. And we were just at the house and we were just filming. Basically, we were filming the sailboat at like all different times of the day. So we were just sitting there like eating pizza and just Sterling was there with the camera. And all of a sudden, a humpback whale and a baby were there. And I was like, turn on the camera. And Sterling's like, ugh, he's like, I'm on the wrong lens. I'm like, I don't care. And so we were able to get this like incredible shot of a humpback whale and its baby and put it in a moment in the film.
So that was from then.
Yeah. So that is, did not happen at the same time or in the same location at all. But yeah, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
That's amazing. So there comes a point then where you're done filming, done, finished post. Can I just also, like, besides Sterling, Red Jane's Red Heartbreaker, the music in this was amazing. I'm also impressed with you for getting some of the
1990s hip-hop. Music supervisors. Yeah. I don't know. They were amazing. I was like, let's try this. And they're like, here's our ideas. Yeah. To me, Chris and I talked about it a lot because, as you can probably imagine, it wasn't cheap. But, you know, I really wanted a well-known 90s song to open the film. I just felt like it would just give everyone permission to buy into the movie right away.
So. I was surprised because I was like, when it started playing, I'm like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. They're doing the thing. Mm-hmm. That's great. So anyway, so you get through that process. Yep. And then I'm fast forwarding. And as somebody who does, like, I also work in post, I totally understand that we shouldn't skip over because there's a whole other stuff there. But your film has a big premiere at Whistler Film Festival. I want to talk about that experience. And was there anything in the response to the film that surprised you?
Yeah. I mean, before that, I just want to speak to Austin because our world premiere was in Austin. Oh. So that was the first time.
Oh, Sabrina, what did you do?
That's okay. Oh. That's okay. Our Canadian premiere was in Whistler, which was also great. But the Austin Film Festival is a festival that has supported my entire career.
Yeah.
They have screened in competition all of my shorts. I help them with, I'm on screening committees with them. I have a writer's group. Like, it just, my whole writing career, I decided to write when I was at the Austin Film Festival, like, okay, 11
years ago.
So I need
to show respect to this festival because we wouldn't have this film otherwise.
You know, it really means a lot to me, and the people involved in this festival mean a lot to me. And so it was really exciting to be able to bring, almost the entire cast came down and just be there with everyone. I think my favorite part was the dinner that we went to the night before, and we all just kind of got to be together and celebrate. But yeah, watching it with an audience was great. It was great and terrible. Like, I don't know. I get very stressed out in watching it with people. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
I watched it twice now in the theater, and I probably won't watch it again. But, you know, having people, I think, sorry, my brain's all over the place with this, but having so many people fly to Austin, Texas to watch this movie was incredible. Like, not just the cast, but their family and friends of mine. My, like, best friend from high school brought her baby because she couldn't not bring her baby. So she flew to Texas with her baby. And my mom came and other people's moms came. And yeah, so it was just like, just to be able to celebrate with everybody. And then in Whistler, so many of our crew came up. And that was so fun to have them there as well. Because, I mean, look, we're here, we're talking about it. Everyone sees your faces and my name, but the crew, man, this movie doesn't happen without our insanely talented crew.
Yeah, powerhouses. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Also, there are some really cool cameos in there as well. I would share them. Okay, Dan Bay, Lisa Duru, like some really. Yeah. No, I'm whispering, but like it's really cool to them. It does, like, when you see a project, you're like, okay, this is like a love letter, you know, to our local industry, and that's definitely what this film felt like for me. I'm not going to mention the vomiting again. It's just like an expression of my so. Laura.
Yes.
What does this film tell us then about the kind of stories that you want to tell moving forward?
I mean, I just want to tell stories about real people having authentic experiences. And I just want female-driven stories and stories that we don't necessarily get to see. And you know, for me, it's almost even less about the stories and it's more about the way we make film.
Yeah.
I think just because it's the way we've always done it doesn't mean that that's the way we have to keep doing it. I think having 16-hour days is insane.
Yeah.
I think yelling at people and showing authority in ways like not allowing your actors to sit, not having chairs on set. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
but just this, like, this very aggressive way that film has always been. I just don't want to make movies like that. I want to make movies where everyone, not just the cast, but the crew, feel safe and comfortable and can speak up when they have ideas or, you know, and like a 10-hour day, that's a good amount of time. right? Mm-hmm. I think it's insane to ask actors to come to set and be vulnerable and share themselves and then work them until they need to sleep for 2 weeks. You should not have to need to sleep for 2 weeks.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's crazy. We had one day on set, you'll know the scene I'm talking about, and anyone who watches it, there's like, there's a big scene. It was a 9.5-page scene, and everyone has a lot of feelings in this scene. Ugh, and that scene. We shot a tiny scene earlier in the day that didn't take very long, and then we shot that scene, and we worked through lunch, and then everyone went home because I was like, I cannot ask these actors to give everything and then keep working. That's crazy. And I honestly don't think that we would have gotten the performances if you had all known that you had 5 more hours of work after that.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's what I want to do. It's less about the stories that I tell and more about like the way in which we make movies. Mm. That's what I want to do, is I want to change the way that movies are made.
You're so awesome.
I kind of want to end by witnessing something happen between the three of you. So I would love for the actors to say something to Laura that you might not have said about working on this film before. And then Laura, I want you to speak to your actors.
Carmen pointed it from me.
Honestly, I think I've said it. I think I've said it all before. I really appreciate you thinking of me, because not a lot of people would have thought of me right off the bat. I mean, that's kind of just the way this industry has been. And I love that you are trying to change how this industry has been. Mm-hmm. Women that are not 20. Mm-hmm. People of color in just human roles. I played so many indigenous roles, and I love that you thought of me for something that wasn't strictly indigenous. I love how you speak to people on set. I love how you write. I love how you think. I love your vision, and I'll work on anything that you do.
Oh, thank you. Now you're gonna make me cry and throw up.
You saw my plan.
Ditto. No, I'm just joking. I am not going to cry. No, I'm not. No, because I won't look. I'll just close my eyes. You've been one of my biggest champions. And it really, really means the world to me that you saw me more than just a pretty good character actor that can fill in those, you know, supporting parts, but saw that I could handle that story, and that you had the confidence in me, and that you keep championing me it means more than you'll know. And I've said this before to you, but when John and I went through like that really life-turning event, I didn't know you at that point. And you were just, I had heard of you, and you just are that kind of person that comes along and says, what do you need? I'll get that for you. And you just get it done. And your empathy that is put into action as compassion is so admirable, and something that I look up to greatly, and reminds me that I got to do that in my life. So thank you for your work as a director, for believing in me, and just being the human that you are. It means the world.
Damn it.
There's tissue.
See, she's best producer ever. She just brings tissues. There you go.
Oh God, I shouldn't have gone last. I mean, the fact that there's a moment that happens on set for me when I'm standing there and everyone starts talking and I'm like, why are you here? Like, it's just, it's mind blowing to me that I would have an idea in my head and that you would want to do it. Like, I thank you for having confidence in me that I don't necessarily have in myself. I might outwardly pretend like I have it, but inside I'm like, why is everyone here? Oh God, they're going to figure it out. just like, thank you for trusting me and thank you for showing up, even when it probably was a little bit difficult. And if you maybe didn't understand what I was asking you to do, you guys are both like everyone, all of the actors, but like, why do neither of you have your own TV series right now? Someone give these women a TV series.
Thanks. Okay. We'll take it.
Yeah. You're just like amazing, wonderful human beings. And thank you for being vulnerable and playing characters that are different, because you're an Indigenous woman who's like a woman who has lots of things that could do all sorts of things.
Thank you.
And you can do all sorts of things too, rather than just walk into a room and then walk out of a room. I don't know if anyone's seen Bronwyn on stage, but holy shit. Like, you both are incredible fucking actors. Oh, can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah. Laura, you say you listen to this show before. Yes, you can swear on my fucking podcast.
I know, I just, I don't know. Maybe this was the one for children. I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
Of course.
But I'm just, like, I'm so grateful for both of you. I'm so grateful for Krista. Oh, my God. This woman over here, I can't even. That's.
But you did. You did. Yeah. Thank you. So if people want to experience reuniting, where can they find it? How can they do it?
When is this airing?
sometime in March 2024.
Okay, great. We are going to be having a theatrical release. Simon, please fix that. we are going to be having a theatrical release in March. Dates TBD. We'll find out soon. And then we'll have it on demand afterwards. I'm sure you can like link it. I don't know a lot about how all that works, but like
yeah. Episode footnotes.
Link a thing with the thing and then tell people when it actually is when we know.
We will link the thing with the thing.
Right. Carmen Moore,
Bronwyn Smith, Laura Adkin. Thank you all three for being here today. Where can our listeners find you, follow you, celebrate you on social media? Not in real life. Damn, that'd be weird.
My address is not okay. I know Krista will want me to say that you can follow the film. Oh my God, what is it? At Reuniting Film on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then, at Laura Adkin. Okay. No S, no T, just Adkin.
And there's often good Disneyland content on the on the at Laura Adkin feed.
If you like Disney, then you'll like my feed.
Which I do. I absolutely do. All right, Bronwyn.
Because I'm super mature, my Instagram handle is at Bronwyn Rules.
Well, you do.
Yeah, there we go. And that's Bronwenrules.
Okay.
I'm at Carmen Moore 1 because there was another Carmen Moore that was taken off.
How dare they? How dare you, Carmen Moore, not 1?
Carmen Moore 1. I love it. It's so good. One.
And on IMDb, I am Carmen Moore 1.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. And you can find all the relevant links to all the relevant stuff in the footnotes today. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, listeners, for joining us today. Please like, subscribe, leave us a review if you are so inclined. They help us find even more listeners and we can keep having rad conversations like the rad one we had today. I think actually this is like one of the first ones where somebody has spoken to editor Simon and it wasn't me during the episode. So that's cool. While Your Screen Scene podcast is hosted and executive produced by me, Sabrina Ranimera Firminger, and it's edited by our beloved Simon Firminger. Special thanks to Mariana Firminger for recording our Patreon ad and to Paul Firminger for technical support. Why Your Screen Scene is a division of my family and Fish Flight Entertainment. Find us at whyveyourscreenscene.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and like Mastodon and Threads. I don't know. I'm on all the things. And if one thing shuts down, find me on the other thing. At Why Your Screen Scene and at Sabrina Arv. Join us next time for another deep dive into Vancouver's dynamic film and television scene. And cut! Hey, filmmakers! Did you know that you can hire top quality, experienced, and professional actors for your films?
If you're producing a student film for course credits, working on a web series, a short or a feature film, you can afford to have some of the best talent in the business in your production. How, you ask? Well, UBCP Actor has an ultra-low budget program, which offers a range of options that cover everything from student films to productions with a $300,000 budget. There is a ULB program that will meet your needs, regardless of your budget. To learn more, visit ubcpactor.ca and look for ultra-low budget programs, or email ulbprogram@ubcpactra.ca. Now is the time to jumpstart your dream for the screen.